If we have not had the chance to meet, my name is David. I am part of the staff here at Severn. I'm also one of the elders at Severn. And I get the chance today to continue our series called Following Jesus, What It Takes and What It Makes. So if you're just joining us for the first half of this series, we looked at what it takes to follow Jesus. So for that part of it, we looked at the armor of God. And now here in the second half of the series, we're looking at what it makes when we follow Jesus, really what following Jesus produces in his followers, and that's the fruit of the Spirit. So we've been going through this. So far we've covered love, joy, peace, and patience. And today, I am also going to talk about patience. We are going to keep teaching on patience until your patience is so tried and tested that we are the most patient church in the world. Pastor Anthony did a great job last week teaching on patience. We've actually touched on patience a few times in the series because Pastor Ryan, when he taught on love, pointed out that the first descriptor for love we get is that love is patient. And in that sermon, Ryan talked about the way that patience is really this idea of long suffering. And then Pastor Anthony last week took us a little bit further into the idea of patience, showing us how we can be patient with those around us and be slow to anger, or slow to erupt, slow to explode on those around us who might require more of our patience. So today, we're going to look at how this long-suffering, you know, slow-to-blow-up kind of patience, how that applies really in life in general. Now, it's not really a surprise to any of us to hear that we live in a hurried and kind of on-demand, you know, instant gratification kind of world. I remember the comedian Brian Regan, if any Brian Regan fans out there. Nope, just me. Oh, a couple. Okay, there we go. He referenced once how Pop-Tarts, on the box of Pop-Tarts, there are microwave instructions on a Pop-Tart box. In case you're curious, you microwave a Pop-Tart for 3 seconds. And We laugh, but that is the hurried world that we live in, that we don't even have time to toast our Pop-Tarts in the morning. But not only is the world we live in hurried, it's also really one of kind of things being on demand, meaning like within our control. So, you know, the internet has to load instantly. We need, you know, same-day delivery. The food needs to be made fast. Basically, we want what we want, and we want it now. But, you know, we're all aware we live in this kind of environment. What we might not be as aware of is how living in a world like that, how living in that kind of environment shapes us in a really deep way. It shapes our minds, it shapes our hearts, and it shapes our expectations about how life should go. In other words, when you and I live in this environment long enough, without even trying, we start to think that everything in life should be easy and convenient and really kind of under our control. But we also all know that's not the world we actually live in. You know, it doesn't take long for us to realize things don't actually go according to our plans. You know, we get the diagnosis that we were never expecting. We get another phone call that another person we love has passed away. Or we spend our whole lives chasing after a certain career or family or body that we just never get. Or we do get it and find out it didn't provide the satisfaction and happiness we thought it would. So really, life just doesn't go according to our plans, which means that we are in dire need of this thing called patience. We're in dire need for patience with life. And when we talk about patience with life, really what we're talking about is patience with God and his plans. Because if we get impatient or angry or bitter about the circumstances in our life that are out of our control, we're really upset with the one who's in control. We're really upset and impatient with God. So the question for us is, how do we become the kind of people who can wait on the Lord and his plans whenever they're not our plans? And how do we become the kind of people who can be patient and endure the suffering and difficulties and trials that we're going to face in this life? And to really answer that, we're going to look at a passage out of James today, James chapter 5, to try to learn three things. We're going to try to learn how to wait well, what waiting does, and then where the strength to wait comes from. And we're going to be in James 5, verses 7 through 11. I'll read through that whole thing here and we'll get rolling. He says, "Therefore, brothers, be patient until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth and is patient with it until it receives the early and the late rains. You also must be patient. Strengthen your hearts because the Lord's coming is near. Brothers, do not complain about one another so that you will not be judged. Look, the judge stands at the door. Brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the Lord's name as an example of suffering and patience. See, we count as blessed those who have endured. You have heard of Job's endurance and have seen the outcome from the Lord. The Lord is very compassionate and merciful. So the first main idea we're going to look at, again, is going to be how to wait well. We're going to try to learn from this passage how to wait well. And to do that, we're going to look at the context first of James. So James is actually a letter that was written to Jewish Christians who didn't really live in the Jewish homeland. They kind of lived out in the Gentile lands. And they would have been influenced by Greek culture and spoken the Greek language. And as you kind of read through the letter, it's very clear that they were facing all sorts of different trials and difficulty, and many of them were poor and being oppressed. And one of the commentaries I was reading pointed out, I never really thought of this, but as Jews, they would have been rejected by their Gentile neighbors, and as Christians, they would have been rejected by the other Jews they lived with in that foreign country or that foreign city. So really, they just were facing all sorts of problems, and that's why the book of James is really bookended by this idea of enduring suffering or being patient through suffering. Because what we just read in chapter 5 is at the end of the book. But if you go back to the beginning of James, I'll actually read you two verses from James chapter 1. This is how James starts his letter. He says, "Consider it a great joy, my brothers, whenever you experience various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. But endurance must do its complete work, so that you may be mature and complete, lacking nothing." So it's clear that this original audience would have been facing all sorts of different problems, kind of various trials, which it points out kind of as a side note that suffering isn't all the same. You know, some suffering is brought about by our own foolish decisions or the foolish decisions of others. Some suffering is actually brought about because you're following Jesus. It's actually a result of your following of Jesus, either because he's leading you into the discomfort of following him instead of your own way, or because people outside you are treating you differently or mistreating you because you're a follower of Jesus. And then some suffering is just unexplainable. We have no idea what's going on or why it's going on. But the reason that you and I should really sit up and take notice is that James is telling his original audience, and he's telling us, that not only is it possible for us to endure well and to patiently go through suffering in a way that's, you know, we're not blowing up at God, we're not being crushed by our circumstances, not only can we get through it, he's saying there is growth and life and fruit that is possible through that suffering, and actually only through that suffering. So as we try to figure out how to wait well, we're going to look at the first example that James actually gives us in this passage about really where to look if we want to learn to wait well. And he pointed to farmers. That's the first place he pointed. So I'm going to read the first two verses that we covered today, verse 7 and 8. I'll reread those for us. He says, "Therefore, brothers, be patient until the Lord's coming, and see how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth and is patient with it until it receives the early and the late rains. You also must be patient. Strengthen your hearts, because the Lord's coming is near." So we're told to look at the farmer, see how he waits. And these early and these late rains that he mentions here were the two most important rains for farmers in that region. The early rain would take place in kind of early fall. It would lead to the seeds germinating, and then the late rains would come in spring and really help the crop fully mature, be a full harvest. So if we take a moment to really stop, like it says, and consider the farmer, look at the farmer, see how they wait, what can we learn about waiting well? So I'm going to pull out two main implications that we get from farming and from farmers that can actually help us as we wait and we endure through the difficulties of life. So the first is that a patient farmer has reasonable, realistic expectations. He has reasonable, realistic expectations. He expects to wait. It's part of the process. Could you imagine how just miserable and impatient a farmer would be if he expected that the day after he planted his wheat, he would walk outside and harvest his wheat? Like, just think of how discouraged he would be if that was the way he approached farming. But that, in our, again, back to kind of our, you know, shortcut, instant gratification culture we live in, that's kind of us. We're kind of that farmer. We have this expectation of, you know, I want to be, and I'm talking to myself here, I want to be this person of depth and character, but I don't want to have to face difficulty. Or I want to be a part of what God is doing in this world, but I would like it to be easy and comfortable and convenient. You know, that's what we are. We're that farmer who has expectations, who's not really, we're not taking into account the actual process. Waiting is part of the process. So the first really thing we learn from the farmer is that we have to have these reasonable expectations that, again, the difficulties that we're going to face, not that we might face, but that there are difficulties we are going to face, so that they don't catch us off guard. So 1 Peter 4:12 says the same thing. He says, "Dear friends, don't be surprised when the fiery ordeal comes among you to test you, as if something unusual were happening to you." He's saying it's not unusual. Don't be surprised. Suffering is part of the process. Trials are part of the process, and not just the process. They're part of following Jesus, and they'll be caused by following Jesus a lot of the time. So, but not only does the farmer have realistic expectations, we're going to stay in this implication for still about expectations, but they're not only realistic about the process that's required, he also has realistic, reasonable expectations that waiting will be worth it in the end. He has seen a harvest before. He has seen the early and the late rains before. He's seen them every year, in fact. So when we hear these early and late rains mentioned here, we might not really catch on to what the early audience would have noticed. Those rains are mentioned in the Old Testament multiple times. And every time they're mentioned, it's actually in the context, within the context of affirming God's faithfulness. Every time. The original audience would have picked up on that when James brought up those rains, but we might have missed it. But what we're being told here is, like the farmer waits knowing that it's going to be worth it in the end because of God's faithfulness, so we can wait when we're enduring suffering. So really the kind of the first implication we can learn from farmers is that we can, if we want to wait well, we need to be able to recognize, first off, that we're going to face difficulty, but second off, that God is faithful and it's going to be worth it in the end. So realistic, reasonable expectations is the first thing we can learn from a farmer if we want to learn how to wait well and endure suffering well. The second thing we can pull from a farmer, there's lots of things we can pull from a farmer. I read a whole sermon. The guy just pulled about 50,000 things from farmers. The second thing we're going to focus on today is that a patient farmer is not lazy. So a patient farmer is not lazy. The more I study this passage, the more I realize that the picture of a farmer is kind of the perfect illustration of the Christian life. A farmer is this beautiful picture of really, really hard work and absolute complete dependence on God. You know, no farmer is foolish enough to think that if he just sits on his couch and waits for rain, that he's going to get a harvest. Doesn't do any work, doesn't do anything, just sits on his couch and waits for rain. Wouldn't expect a harvest. No farmer would think that. But also, no farmer is foolish enough to think that if it never rains, he's going to be able to make up for that by working really hard. No farmer thinks that. He has to plow the land, he has to plant the seed, and then he has to completely depend on God. It's both. He plows and plants, completely depend on God to make the seed sprout, to make the sun rise, to make the rain fall, and to bring growth. So for you and I, the same thing is true. Just going through difficulty by itself does not automatically lead us to depth and maturity and for God to do great things. Just sitting around while bad things happen wouldn't just automatically lead to that. It's possible, but there's work for us to do, just like there is for the farmer. And the work that we're actually pointing to specifically here by James about how to wait well, he tells us to strengthen our hearts. He says, strengthen your hearts because the Lord's coming is near. Now, there's obviously a lot we could kind of go to kind of as how to do that. But really, at its core, what that is it's turning all of our attention to what the return of Jesus really entails. It's strengthening our hearts by turning our attention to that. And what does that actually mean? And what does it mean in relation to our waiting, our patience through suffering? What does that actually mean for us? So I'm going to give you a real quick, non-exhaustive list of some of those truths, some of those things that we can turn our attention to about what the return of Jesus means for our suffering. First off, it means that this suffering, whatever it is, has an end. Jesus is coming back, which means he will make all things new and all suffering will come to an end. Secondly, it means that this suffering has a purpose. You know, the God of all of history has your life in his hands, and your suffering is actually part of that plan. No matter how perplexing it might seem, it's part of his plan, and he often, just for example, often uses the suffering of his people to not only draw them closer to himself, but to draw people who would never want anything with God actually to God through seeing God's people suffer. Sounds backwards to us, but so often that's what the purpose of our suffering is. And then thirdly, this suffering does not refute God's faithfulness. He has not forgotten about you. Jesus is coming back. He hasn't forgot about you. He keeps his promises. So that's a super short list. It's a nice list, but that's about 30 seconds of reminding ourselves what the return of Jesus means for us. You and I need so much more than that. We need so much more than 30 seconds on a Sunday morning to turn our attention so that we can wait well through difficulty. And that's why one of the reasons why we need spiritual disciplines. It's why we need to be in God's word and in prayer and in community and serving and all these things that are designed to keep our attention on the fact that Jesus is coming back and all the truths that come with that. So all these things that we would do are essentially like us plowing the field and planting the seed. We're not making growth on our own, but we are doing the work that a patient farmer would do. A patient farmer wouldn't be lazy. So just to kind of recap how to wait well from what we can see in this passage, we see that waiting well would include having reasonable, realistic expectations, both about the difficulty we're facing and the God who's leading us through them, his faithfulness. That's going to be worth it in the end. But also, it's a patience that it's a waiting that is active and completely dependent at the same time. So if that's what waiting well looks like, what is the result for us if we actually do this? If we actually endure well, if we're actually patient through suffering, what does that actually lead to? What does it do? That'll be our second main idea today, what waiting does. And to look at this, we're going to actually go to the next example that James gives us in this passage, which is the prophets. I'm going to read verses 10 and the first half of verse 11 for us again. It says, "Brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the Lord's name as an example of suffering and patience. See, we count as blessed those who have endured." So being a prophet of God was really not a smoozy job. It was about one of the most difficult lives you could have. For example, Jeremiah, one of the Old Testament prophets, was given a message by God to take to God's people, you know, to call them to turn back to God. He was going to help them. But God also told him, he said, "Jeremiah, they're not going to listen to you." Could you imagine that? You're given a message, go tell these people this, but don't worry, they're not going to listen to you. Like that's Jeremiah's mission going into it. But then not only do they not listen to him, they want to kill him. And we're told that we count as blessed people like Jeremiah. So it doesn't really sound like our definition of blessed. Jesus, though, continues and actually said this exact same thing in Matthew chapter 5, verses 11, 12. He said, "You are blessed when they insult and persecute you and falsely say every kind of evil against you because of me. Be glad and rejoice because your reward is great in heaven. For that is how they persecuted the prophets who were before you." So we see the same idea from Jesus of being blessed for difficulty, through suffering. And he actually adds, goes a little bit further and says, your reward is great in heaven. He says, the prophets were blessed for the same reason you'll be blessed when you suffer for my sake, is that your reward is great in heaven. Now, there's definitely some mystery here. You know, we're being called to rejoice in suffering, rejoice in difficulty because of this future reward it's leading to. But while that sounds a little mysterious, we actually see examples like this all around us in daily life. For example, if you endure the suffering of exercise, you can reap the future reward of health. Or if you endure the suffering of surgery, you can reap the future reward of being alive still. Or if you, for example, if you endure the suffering of childbearing and childbirth, you reap the reward of a child. These are all examples of future reward that not in spite of the suffering, but actually through it. The suffering produces the reward. The Apostle Paul hits on this in even a greater scale in 2 Corinthians 4, 16 through 18. He had just finished talking about how persecuted they've been, how difficult the circumstances are that they're in, and then he says this. He says, "Therefore, we do not give up. Even though our outer person is being destroyed, our inner person is being renewed day by day. For our momentary light affliction is producing for us an absolutely incomparable eternal weight of glory. So we do not focus on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." So again, you see this idea, it's the suffering actually producing the eternal weight of glory. It's actually leading to it. It's not in spite of it, it's actually through it. And I think these kinds of ideas, are this idea in particular, is so hard for us to grasp, because you heard what Paul there, he says, we focus on what is unseen, not on what is seen. This is so hard for us to do because we don't naturally do that. Our natural tendency is always going to be to focus on what is seen, not on what is unseen. It's actually outside of our human capabilities to be able to rejoice while going through difficulties because of some unseen future reward. That's why this sort of patience is called a fruit of the Spirit. This is God's work in us. But what I wanted to point out today is not just that this sort of waiting, this sort of enduring leads to future reward. It does that, but it also can be and often is the mechanism by which God takes our focus off of the here and now and moves it to the unseen future. It can actually turn us into people who are excited about and anticipating the return of Jesus because we're no longer enamored with the false promises of this world and the happiness and the satisfaction that it says it can give us. Because it really doesn't take that much. I mean, it doesn't take much of our life falling apart for us to realize, oh, this isn't it. You know, this isn't the promised land. This isn't my home. And then what it can do is shapes us into people who look forward and can even say, like the psalmist about God, that your steadfast love is greater than life. It's better than life. So it actually is suffering that can drive this deeper desire for God into our hearts and drive us into closer communion with God than would otherwise have ever been possible. And Job is the last example that we're given in this passage from James as enduring through suffering. And a lot of the commentaries pointed out, it seems a little bit weird that Job is listed here. And I'll explain why. If you know the story of Job, he was a man that the Bible calls a man of perfect integrity who feared God and turned away from evil. So the best guy you've ever known. Like, that's who Job was. And in the story of Job, it's fascinating. There's this scene where Satan accuses Job of only following God, only being faithful, because God made his life so nice. Job had wealth, he had success, he had a good family, he was healthy. So what happens through the story of Job is you watch as God allows for each of those things to be taken away from him one at a time through different tragedies. And understandably, Job is distraught, and he's crying out to God, and he's confused, and he's questioning. So he doesn't necessarily look like what we would think is the perfect example of how to suffer well. You know, he's crying out, he's confused, he's questioning, and it actually should be super encouraging to us that he's listed here in James, because he didn't go through it like some stoic who had no feelings. He didn't go through it like a person who had no pain. The one thing Job did is he never lost his faith, and he kept going back to God over and over, and he took all his questions to God over and over again. And what happens at the end is God finally answers him. But what God doesn't do is tell him why he went through all that suffering. Instead, God asks him four chapters worth of rhetorical questions. Questions like this: Where were you when I established the earth? And have you ever in your life commanded the morning or assigned the dawn its place? Those are the kinds of rhetorical questions God asked Job. And each question, what it did was it revealed to Job more clearly who he was in comparison to who God is. And at the end of it, it's easy to miss this, but this is what Job says at the end, after God's four chapters of rhetorical questions. He said, I had heard rumors about you, but now my eyes have seen you. And the reason that's easy for us to miss is because if you know the story of Job, you know his earthly possessions actually are returned and doubled. God actually blesses him with wealth and family and success again. But those earthly possessions, those were not the ultimate reward for Job's suffering. They were not what his suffering really led to. What his suffering led to was this deeper, intimate, loving relationship with the creator of the universe, where he said, I had heard about you, but now I see you. And this is what waiting well does for us, too. This is what patiently enduring suffering does. It takes really our tendency to make little heavens here on earth and try to work to find our heaven here on earth. It drives that out of us. And it really gives us a clearer picture of who we really are and who God really is. And it brings us into a relationship with him, a depth of relationship with him that would not be possible outside of the difficulty. And this is a reward. This is really the blessedness. This is a reward that nothing can take away. It's really the ultimate blessedness, the ultimate reward. Because no suffering can take away anything you pursue. It can take away anything you want in life except for the love of God. And what's amazing to read here in James is not only, and the story of Job, is not only can it not take away your relationship with God, it can actually deepen it and grow it and add to it. But that obviously begs the question, you know, if that's how we wait well, and this is what it can do in us, how do we endure it? How do we actually have the strength to do this? You know, how do we really pull this off? And that's what we're going to talk about last. It's, you know, where the strength to wait actually comes from. Because maybe today you feel like Job. You know, maybe you feel like, yeah, I've heard about God, but I've never really experienced him. I've never really seen him. And the things I'm going through in my life right now really make it hard to believe that a good God could be behind that. And I'll say right now, like, being, you know, up on the stage, be super audacious for me to assume, like, I know what you're going through. Like, I'm only 35. I don't know what you guys are going through. And I know, the ones I do know what you're going through, it's stuff that, you know, unimaginable difficulty with unexplained circumstances, you know, things that we just can't put our finger on. So the real question is, how do we endure? How do we do this? Where does the strength come from? And the end of this passage, the very last verse we read, points us in the right direction. So this is James 5, this is verse 11. It says, "See, we count as blessed those who have endured. You have heard of Job's endurance and have seen the outcome from the Lord. The Lord is very compassionate and merciful." So in that one verse, that's just one verse, we actually have three different words that pertain to our attention. We're kind of coming back here to the idea of what are we putting our attention on? Because you might have noticed, you might not, but it says see, we count as blessed those who have endured. You have heard of Job's endurance, and you have seen the outcome from the Lord. The Lord is very compassionate and merciful. So you have seen, heard, and seen. And the reason for that is when we go through trials, when we have suffering that we have to endure, that becomes our sole focus. That's our natural tendency, is all I see is my circumstances and myself. But if that's where our attention is, we will never have the strength to endure. If we are just looking at ourselves and just looking at the circumstance, we will never have the strength to patiently go through suffering. But if our attention is moved to what this passage is moving it to, we will have the strength to endure. And here's why. If you boiled it down, what this passage is pointing us to is the purpose of God and the character of God. So in Job's life, you see the purpose of God to bring people in relationship, into relationship with him, to close that gap, to show his love and his mercy for his glory and for our good. You see that purpose in Job's story. You even see that purpose in the prophet's story. And you see his character, you see his compassion and his mercy, and that not only was he doing what was best for Job and giving him more of himself, but he also doubled his earthly possessions. You see this above and beyond love and graciousness and generosity of God in the story of Job. Now, you might be thinking, hey, I don't have the same story as Job, so how's that help me? It's true. We don't have the same story as Job, but we do have the same God as Job. And his purpose and his character has not changed since then, and it will not change ever. I'm going to call up the worship team, and we'll actually wind down here. There's real value for us as Christians to look back in the past at people like Job and the prophets and Christians from, you know, throughout church history. There's real value there to look back and see God's purpose and see God's character on display again and again and again. I can't tell you how encouraging it is whenever you read about someone who lived 500 years ago and you hear about them following God and their experience, what it's like, and you can relate. Like, someone 500 years ago in a different country has the same experience as me because it's the same God. You see the same purpose and the same character on display again and again. However, as helpful as that is, there is one place to look where we get the most clear picture of God's purpose and God's character, and that is the person and the work of Jesus Christ. Because in Jesus, we get to see on display that the one we're waiting for is also the one who gives us the strength. Because while his death shows us that suffering is inevitable, suffering will happen in us because it happened in our Savior and our Lord, his resurrection is a foretaste of really all that is waiting for anyone who puts their trust in him. His resurrection really points us to the future as a foretaste of what's coming. So me and my wife, Shayna, we have three children. Our oldest, Reese, is 7 years old, about to be 8. And I still, I mean, it doesn't sound that long ago, 7 years. Some of you guys are like, I've been alive for 70 years. But I still remember our first appointment where we got to hear Reese's heartbeat, which if you've ever had kids, that is a beautiful moment. You get to hear the heartbeat of your child. And while that was beautiful, it was just a foretaste of what was coming because we still had to wait 9 months. And my wife, Shayna, had to endure some real discomfort and some real pain of childbirth before we actually held our child in our arms. But if you asked Shayna, which I did ask her this week, knowing a child was coming made all that discomfort a lot more bearable, she was a lot more able to endure well. But again, that heartbeat was just a foretaste of what was coming. You know, our child was already in the womb, but was not yet in our arms. And our child was already being formed, but was not yet fully formed. And in the same way, Jesus' resurrection is a foretaste of what's to come for all who trust in him. Because in his resurrection, he signaled that the defeat of sin and death has already happened. But we are not yet free of their presence. And in his resurrection, he put on display the power by which he's going to renew the entire world and make everything new again. But this world is not yet renewed. And in his resurrection, Jesus is called the first fruits of what will happen to all of us who put our faith in him. We'll all be given new bodies and live for all of eternity in communion with God. But we're not there yet. We don't have new bodies yet. It's not perfect yet in our ability to live with God in communion. So on that day, all of our troubles will pale in comparison to the glory that we will see that will be revealed to us. But until that day, we wait on the Lord. And we strengthen ourselves, we strengthen our hearts by looking to Jesus, who suffered on the cross, meaning that we should expect to suffer too, but who rose again 3 days later, meaning that all that suffering will be worth it in the end. Let me pray for us. Father, I just pray that you would make us a people who are able to endure suffering and to be patient through difficulty, not through our strength, but through yours. God, we are so confused sometimes, and there are so many things that we can go through that we have no understanding of, but they are not surprises to you. And while we wouldn't pick them, I know that at the end, if we're closer to you, in hindsight, we probably would pick them. God, knowing you really is the greatest reward, and we thank you that you would go to such great lengths to make that possible, and that you are with us, and you are faithful through our suffering. We just pray that you would help us to trust you, to know that your purpose and your character are unchanging and they are good. We pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen.